Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
We're getting more information on the deal for the rail workers that was reached last week. The longest strike in Starbucks history continues in Boston. And today on the show, it's Smart Local 85 in Atlanta, Georgia, and the iron workers in West Palm Beach, Florida. Welcome to the Monday, September 19th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today, both of them newcomers. We appreciate that. A lot of new folks coming to the show, various parts of the country, talking about what they're doing, their apprenticeship programs, the workload, and reaching out to young workers to get them involved in the trades. And that's exactly what we're going to focus on today. Steve Langley is going to be our first guest. He comes to us from the Sheet Metal Workers Union. That would be Smart Local 85. They're based in Atlanta, Georgia. He started the apprenticeship program down there back in 1990, rose to the ranks of foreman, and he managed some of the largest projects awarded in that area, including the Federal Reserve Bank, the Redmond Hospital, and various data centers. Gradually, he moved up the ranks. He was appointed to the position of business manager. This was back in business rep. That was back in 2010. And then in November of 2020, he was nominated and elected unopposed to the position of business manager and also financial secretary treasurer. That's his current position right now. We're going to talk about organizing. Keep in mind, Georgia is a right-to-work state, how that is causing some difficulties. We'll also take a look at what they're doing for outreach to high schools. And they did a lot, apparently, during the summer, so it'll bring us up to speed on that. The benefits of being union: higher wages, insurance, health, dental, eye care, you name it. We'll run it all down. Steve Langley is our first guest. Jeff Bailey will be joining us later in the show. And he's an iron worker. He's with the local 402, 20-year member of that local, which is located in West Palm Beach, Florida. He was a foreman supervisor in the field going back to 2002 until 2015, then was elected as president in 2015 and hired as apprenticeship coordinator and served in that capacity until about 2 years ago. Then he ran for business manager, and that's his position now. So we'll touch on their apprenticeship programs and safety on the job. Boy, that's so important. Well, it's important in all the trades, but iron workers, I tell you, we do the show out of Iron Workers Local 17, and the Iron Workers nationally are sponsors, and I have learned a lot from those guys. Oh my God, that's a tough bunch, but it's so important. I mean, you're working in very, very high places, and you got to have the harnesses, you got to have all the equipment, because you want to come home at the end of the day. It's so darn important. So Jeff Bailey will be our second guest on the show. And now, a brief look into the world of labor, the segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. Slowly but surely, we're getting more details on the negotiations that led to a tentative deal for the rail workers last Thursday. Those were the marathon talks that went for like 20 hours involving the Labor Secretary, Marty Walsh, Pete Buttigieg from Transportation, and Tom Vilsack, who heads the Agriculture Department. President Biden told him, says, hey, you know what? We got to carve a deal out. And the Republicans, we talked about this on the show last week, were pretty much figuring that these guys were going to go on strike, and they wanted to force a contract down the workers' throats. Biden said, no, we could come up with something if we work hard at it, and they did. They did. And we're getting some details on that. Hours before the deadline, the agreement includes the entitlement to attend medical appointments without penalty, one additional paid day off, wage increases, and freezes to the cost of medical benefits. In large part, this was not all about wages. I mean, wages were in there. It was the work schedules, which led rail workers to miss major life events or postpone important medical care. They couldn't even go to the doctor without being docked pay. Now, if and when the agreement is ratified, workers will receive an average payout of $11,000. They still could go on strike. And if you take a deep dive into the industry, you know, you have to wonder, why did we get to this point? Well, let me explain. In the 1980s and the 1990s, the rail industry consolidated into seven main carriers, seven of them, which are now making record profits. Last year, 2021, profits for the two largest railroad corporations in the country, Union Pacific and BNSF, jumped 12% to $21.8 billion and 11.6% to $22.5 billion, respectively. That's a chunk of money. Now, between November of 2018 and December of 2020, the rail industry lost 40,000 jobs, most of them among the people who actually operated the trains. And this is because the railroads adopted a new system called PSR, which stands for Precision Schedule Railroading. We've touched on this on the show many times with Greg Regan on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department. And this led to a lot of chaos. The system made the trains more efficient by keeping workers on very tight schedules that leave little time for anything but work. So any disruption, like I indicated, a family emergency, that brought about disciplinary action and possible a job loss. So again, that's pretty much what led up to this. And we have a comment here from Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO. She said the entire labor movement stands in solidarity with the freight rail workers in their fight for the basic quality of life that they and their families deserve. Despite all the obstacles, these essential frontline union members keep America and our economy moving forward. Whatever the outcome of the ratification votes, we know which side we're on. We will always stand shoulder to shoulder with our members in the fight for dignity and justice on the job. Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO. So we should get some indication probably in the next 2 weeks if they're going to go ahead and ratify that deal. Well, last Thursday in Minnesota, 15,000 nurses went back to work after a three-day strike. There are no signs that the two sides are any closer to a resolution over higher pay and control over staffing. Hospitals have offered close to a 10% pay raise over 3 years, but the unions have not dropped their demands for a 30% raise and commitments on staffing and retention policies. So it brings to close the largest private sector nurse strike ever to have taken place in the United States, at least for a temporary basis. They didn't want to make this a long one because eventually it would have hurt, obviously, the people they're caring for. It was a three-day strike. And the hospital, they brought in replacement workers, from what I've been picking up. And those who came to the hospital had no clue where anything was. So it was mass confusion. Minor league baseball players have officially unionized. An independent arbitrator found earlier last week that a majority of unit members have submitted authorization cards favoring unionization under the Major League Baseball Players Association. This follows the week before's news that the league and its owners had committed to recognizing the new union without a formal election process. So that's moving in the right direction. And now that's the 58th union that makes up the AFL-CIO. Meanwhile, the largest strike in Starbucks company history continues today in Boston. This is on Commonwealth Avenue, where picketers have moved from store property to the sidewalk. The company threatened to issue a trespassing notice and pursue other legal processes. And after 60 days of demonstrations without safety incidents, union workers say that the company's allegation that their picket line threatens public safety is pretext. Workers at five locations in Massachusetts walked out in August, but only the striking workers at Commonwealth Avenue have kept the store closed for 29, actually going on 31 days, spurred by issues like discrimination and disputes over benefits. Meantime, Workers United, this was last week, they filed an unfair labor practice against Starbucks, alleging that the company illegally pushed out one of the organizers, Jazz Brissack. Jazz, who's a Rhodes Scholar, whose story was featured by the New York Times and other outlets, decided to become a barista in order to help unionize its stores in Buffalo, New York. Well, when she first got her job at Starbucks, this was in late 2020, a single Starbucks shop had yet to be unionized. Well, her store went on to become the first. Since then, Starbucks has declined to accommodate her scheduling requests and scheduling her on days where she has informed the company that she's not available to work. She wrote in a letter to her manager last week, "Starbucks has deliberately made my continued employment at the company pretty much impossible." So she submitted to her manager that this can't go on anymore, that she would be assigned three shifts during the next work period. "I look forward to coming back to work at Starbucks when the NLRB orders my reinstatement." So they parted their ways, and Jazz claims the other employees have been allowed to work one or two days a week at the store, and that therefore Starbucks' refusal to allow her to do the same, guess what? That's discrimination. And that goes, of course, to the National Labor Relations Board. The company denied that they're applying scheduling disproportionately for different employees, like the ones that are trying to unionize. Yeah, well, let's screw with you just a little more. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with Smart Local 85 in Atlanta, Georgia.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. Make sure you get that word union there. Before we get to our first guest, just want to do a shout-out for the Painters and Allied Trades Local 1103. They celebrated their centennial on Saturday night in Mentor, Ohio. And I was one of the lucky people that got to speak to the crowd. They had about 125 people there. And a little shout-out to Joe Schief. Joe has been with that local for over 50 years. The local actually started on April 14th, 1921. They tried to do the celebration, the 100th anniversary celebration last year, but obviously we're in the middle of a pandemic, so they postponed it for 1 year. And I'll tell you, they did a great job on the program. They have pictures going back to 1921 when they started that local. And they're going strong. They're part of District Council 6 of IUPAT, and District Council 6 covers the entire state of Ohio. Good group of folks there. So congratulations to Joe. Joe's already retired, and he's turned over the reins to new leadership there. In fact, we should get them on the show to talk about their history, and they have a very, very rich history in northeastern Ohio. All right, let's go down to Atlanta, Georgia right now. And joining us on our live line is Steve Langley. And Steve is with Smart Local 85. They have about 2,000 members. And how about this? They cover the entire state of Georgia and three counties in Alabama. That's a lot of driving for this guy. Steve Langley, welcome to America's Workforce.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How do you handle that? I mean, that's a lot. Georgia's a big state, man.
Well, I have three good business representatives and one great organizer that we have to help me out all over the place.
That's good. That, well, you need that. You definitely need that. So that number, 2,000, is that pretty constant, up, down? What's the story?
Yeah, it stays right around there. Most of the time, we've actually been growing over the last couple of years. When I first started, we probably had about 75 apprentices. Last year, we graduated 70, and we had over 300 apprentices.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Well, this is a very good field to be in. Well, all the trades are good, but when it comes to sheet metal workers, you think about HVAC, ventilation. It's so important, especially with this pandemic, and the schools that need ventilation upgrades. Oh, my gosh, that's a whole show in itself. But talk to me about yourself. I see you started the apprenticeship program going back to 1990, a few years ago. What made you go into the sheet metal field?
Well, I had got laid off from Lockheed Martin, and my father-in-law was a business representative for Local 85, and my brother-in-law graduated high school, and he asked me if I wanted to start the program. And me and my brother-in-law both started at the same time. And I worked for a mechanical sheet metal plumbing company for 20-something years. And I've been in the office here now 12 years. So
you didn't look back. All right, good.
Never look back.
I was reading earlier about some of the projects that you worked on. One of them was the Federal Reserve Bank. Another was a hospital. What kind of scope are those projects? What are we talking about there?
Well, the Federal Reserve Bank, yes, that was the first job that I ever ran by myself after my mentor, he retired. And I seen the most money I've ever seen in my life in that place. They took me down in the vault. There was $90 billion in there.
$90 billion. Oh, my gosh. I would imagine they had the best security in the world there, right?
Oh, yeah. I asked the guard, I said, how easy is it to get in this? He said, oh, you just hop on back one of them robots right there. But when you go through that scanner and it scans it, the door shuts and you can't get out.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was a very interesting job. We had a lot of unique products on that job, and that was real good. But I've done a lot of data centers. I've done a lot of hospital work. I'm sitting here at Hartsfield-Jackson Airport. I did a remodel of Concourse A back in 2004. Hartsfield-Jackson Airport, they supply about hundreds of thousands of work hours for good union-paying jobs.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned some of the data centers. I'm just wondering, and I'm thinking, especially when it comes to electronics, ventilation is crucial. Can you speak to that? Because if they get too hot, they shut down.
Oh, yeah. I did the first Google project. Of course, you know, you couldn't use Google, Microsoft, Facebook, and any other names. They go by code names, even though everybody knows that's what the project is. But I did the first Google project in Georgia. It was over in Lithia Springs, Georgia. And it's very crucial on keeping the air cool in them places, because those machines, they put off a lot of heat.
Yeah.
And if they go down, it's millions of dollars an hour.
Right. So as far as you kind of touched on the work, and I'm just wondering, there's a lot of good things coming out of Washington, like the infrastructure bill. And I don't know the situation with your infrastructure in Georgia. You don't get the weather that we get up in the north, but how are we faring with that? What's the outlook?
Well, something that you mentioned a while ago, the Clean Air Act is part of the infrastructure bill, and it's a very important thing. The coronavirus was airborne, so there's grant money out there right now, and if you affiliate yourself with SMART, you automatically get the money to put new air handling units, new ventilation systems into your schools and even into some of the companies. We're talking with Southern Company right now about doing their office buildings along with some of the other major industries in Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Are the schools reaching out saying, hey, we need an upgrade here? You mentioned, I know there's government money, there's grant money for this, but from what I've been able to gather, there's a big part of our population, especially in like inner city schools, that are, they're atrocious. I mean, they're still dealing with lead paint in a lot of them.
You are correct. My organizer, who is on top of going to counties and municipalities, they have to apply for the money. And if they apply for it, then the schools will get the money. But, you know, it's all a lot of dealing with government. So you know how that is.
Right, right. Well, you throw in, you know, extreme heat, extreme cold. I remember a story a couple of years ago. There were kids in Detroit that had to wear winter coats in the classroom because the temperature was like 50 degrees. And then, I don't know if you know this, but teachers in Columbus, Ohio, went on strike about a month ago. And they went back to work and all that. But one of the issues was it was too hot in the classrooms. And they didn't have...
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And being in Georgia, I would imagine you have to deal with that as well, right?
Oh, yeah. And some of our school systems, they have air conditioning and heating units that were put in the 40s and 50s, 60s. I mean, they're very outdated. They don't get enough fresh air intake into their system to keep the air purified. And then, you know, not changing filters out. Like you said, it's just a dirty system. It needs to be revamped and redone.
So, Steve, we're speaking with Steve Langley. He is the business manager, financial secretary, treasurer of Smart Local 85 in Atlanta, Georgia. They cover the entire state, along with three counties in Alabama. How is your legislature? I know you got a pretty conservative legislature. We're getting, you know, a lot of money coming out of Washington. I mean, it's two different worlds. You got Washington, and then you got places like Georgia. How are they handling this down there? Are they addressing the problems that we're talking about?
It's hard to say. You know, when they came out with all the Medicaid, Medicare money from the federal government, Georgia was one of the states that didn't take it. A lot of the southern states didn't. I'm hoping they don't hurt our children by not taking this grant money and this money coming from the federal government to keep our air clean and keep our children safe. But you never can tell in these politics.
Yeah, and also your right to work state. Have you been right to work for a long time down there?
Yeah, Georgia's been right to work for less from 1947.
Oh, from the beginning. Okay.
Oh yeah, yeah.
How's that? How's that affecting as far as organizing? How's that affecting local 85?
Well, you know, if you get out and explain right to work, where you don't have to be union to work, and you show them that they're making, you know, a lower wage and having to pay for all their benefits out of that wage, or you can come over here and work with us and you get a good, decent wage with benefits that's on top of that wage, and you have insurance and health care for your whole family, and, you know, you have a good retirement where you can retire as early as 55 years of age. A lot of times it's not as hard to organize them people as you'd think.
Mm-hmm. Has that worked for you? I mean, you got a lot of history here down running that local. I mean, are you bringing them over to the from the dark side to the right side?
Yeah, when I first started, like I said, 12 years ago, we were at about 1,600 members, and we're up to 2,000, a little over 2,000 right now. So it's working.
Good.
Getting the young people in right out of high school, we do a big sponsorship in the community with the Georgia High School Friday night high school games.
Yeah.
And we sponsor that along with the building trades, the IBEW 613 and UA 72. And we get a lot of good high school candidates from that.
Good. Well, let's pick up on that. Steve Langley joining us on our live line, and he is the business manager, financial secretary of Smart Local 85 in Atlanta, Georgia. By the way, SMART is an acronym. It stands for Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transportation Union, and they went that direction, I would say, about a dozen years ago. Good group of folks nationally. Jeff Bailey will be joining us later in the show on behalf of the iron workers. He's at Local 402 in West Palm Beach, Florida. We'll be back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Hello from the Communication Workers of America, District 4. We are a labor union representing a vast array of workers in different industries, including the Association of Flight Attendants, Telecommunications, CWA Passenger Services, Public Health Care, and Education Workers, the IUE, CWA Industrial Division, the National Association of Broadcast Employees, the CWA News Guild, not to mention our growing digital sector, and many others. If you're interested in organizing your work group or learning more about what it means to be CWA strong, visit our website at www.cwad4.org. That's cwad4.org.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. When you get an opportunity, just do this, sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. In fact, Melissa Cropper will be joining us on the show tomorrow. Right now, we're checking in with Steve Langley. Steve is the business manager, financial secretary, and treasurer of Smart Local 85, based in Atlanta, Georgia. Steve, I'm hearing a lot about the worker shortage. And I know the apprenticeship programs you mentioned earlier about how well yours is doing. We could touch on that a little bit more, and you touched on recruiting, but it's pretty much across all the trades. Maybe I know you can speak to the sheet metal workers, but what's your assessment in the state of Georgia right now?
And it's all across the country. I went to a conference not too long ago, and there was an economist there, and he said that there was like 17 million jobs available, with 5 million of them in construction, and we have a workforce of about 3 million to fill those jobs. So we're not able to fill all the jobs. So at Local 85, we've been recruiting, we've been hitting it hard, and we've been able to fill every job that we've needed so far, but it is getting tighter and tighter in the market, along with all the other building trades, sister unions, and all the other different job opportunities, careers.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you attribute that to? And I bring that up because I'm hearing a lot of employers saying, well, people today, and the pandemic, I think, had a lot to do with this, but a lot of employers are saying people don't want to work anymore. Or I don't know, they're looking for jobs that may not exist right now. Who knows? what's your answer to that?
I really don't know, but I did hear that, like, Amazon will go through every worker that is available for their type of work in the next 3 years. And that's hard to believe, and that's across the country. The younger group, you know, it used to be everybody wanted their kids to go to college. Everybody wanted them to go to college. And that's a good thing. I mean, I don't knock college. Both my daughters went to college and got good careers. But with the trades, you go in, instead of going and paying to learn how to weld, you come into our field and you learn to weld, and it don't cost you a penny. You go through a four-year apprenticeship and come out with a good-paying, great benefit job. And it's a career for 30, 35 years that you want to work, and then you can retire when you're as young as 55 years old and sit at home and draw money. But it's, you know, this younger generation, a lot of them, they don't want to travel. When I was young, you know, you may have traveled 2 hours from home to go to a project, and they don't want to do that anymore. They want to spend more time doing stuff they want to do.
Mm-hmm. You know, that retirement age at 55, that could be a problem, too. And I don't know what the average age is in 85, but retirements are obviously putting a damper on things. This is across the board with all the trades. But I'm wondering, do a lot of people take advantage of that at 55, or do they usually go longer? And obviously, you can speak to just your local.
Our average at Local 85 is 59 retiring. Our average age is 45. The average age of people getting into the local is 28. And that has to do with, you know, us organizing in out of the open shop companies and bringing in skilled people that's already got a portion of their skill and they don't have to go through their apprenticeship. But the retirement early can hurt. We try to talk them into staying until they're 62 to 65. But construction is just like a lot of other, I compare it to professional sports. You know, you climbing ladders and lifting heavy stuff for 30, 35 years, your body just gets wore out.
Yeah. Steve, I didn't do any of that, and I'm worn out. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Let me ask you about attracting females into the trade. I know National is really pushing that, though, you know, people of color, too. So, and diversity, that's really changing when it comes to not just construction, but all walks of life. How are you faring at 85 on that?
We do pretty good. I'm going to the women's trade next month, but as far as Local 85, you know, we have probably 2-3% women. We have some transgenders. We have, as far as different races, we have, you know, skin color, whatever you want to call it. We have probably 50-50 on that. Okay. Nowadays.
Good. So are you moving in the right direction with that? Are you reaching out more so you can increase those numbers?
Yes, and when I took over in 2020 as the business manager, and I don't see color, but I hired the first black organizer in Local 85's history. We have our vice president is a lady that's, you know, on the, I don't know the acronym for the gay lesbian community, but they do excellent work and they do a great job at what they do for Local 85. She's our women's committee leader, and she'll be in Las Vegas at the women's conference as well.
Are you talking about the Trade Nations conference? Is that what you're referring to? Yeah. I know they were doing
Trades Nation.
Yeah, they were doing that virtually for a couple of years. But yeah, we've been promoting that on the show, and there's some.
Yeah, it's a very good.
Yeah.
Conference.
Yeah, a lot of good people behind there. All right, Steve, I just wanted to get a snapshot of how you're doing over there in Atlanta, Georgia. Again, big territory, the entire state of Georgia, 3 counties in Alabama, 2,000 members. And moving in the right direction there. Anything else you want to say here before we button it up?
Well, what we was just talking about, I will tell you that our international and Local 85 is a big supporter of it. It's Be For All, and I have your back.
There you go. Smart85.org is a website. Smart85.org. Well, you take care, my brother. Keep in touch with us. You got your hands full down there, but I like what you're doing, so keep it at it, all right?
We appreciate you, and y'all have a nice day.
You got it. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Jeff Bailey is an iron worker, 20-year member. He's with Local 402, West Palm, Florida, and he's coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter or do both. AWF Union Podcast. Make sure you get that word union in there. AWF Union Podcast. Again, if you miss a show, check out our website. Everything's archived there. AWFpodcast.com. AWFpodcast.com. Let's go down to West Palm, Florida right now. And joining us on line number two is Mr. Jeff Bailey. Jeff is the business manager of Ironworkers Local 402. Ironworkers nationally are sponsors of America's Workforce. We appreciate that. Mr. Bailey, welcome to America's Workforce. How are we doing today, my brother?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. I'm doing good. Good, good, good. We just still do the show at Ironworkers Local 17. You know the business manager here, don't you, Rich Jordan?
I know Rich Jordan very well. He's a good man.
He's a good. Oh yeah, he fights hard for his workers. I'm sure you do the same down there in 402. Talk to me about your local a little bit.
Our local, we're very fortunate. We've almost been in business 100 years here in West Palm, Riviera Beach area, and we were very fortunate in our earlier years. We had a nuke in our backyard that kept a lot of people working, and we still have people that work there, but we're also in the commercial market here. And it's a hard market in South Florida to be in the commercial market, but we're still doing our best we can with the contractors that we have.
Okay. So your membership at 200, has that been pretty steady? Up, down, where?
That's been pretty steady. It'll go up some, then it goes down some, but that's a pretty solid number that we're riding on. We'd like to improve that number, but in the commercial markets, when everything's going well, we'll pick up members, but when the market downturns, it affects our membership as well.
You know, talk to me a little bit about the iron workers as far as that are not involved in the union. And I know, especially with the iron workers, I mean, it's safety, 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 safety. This is a tough job. There's obviously, that's why you have the apprenticeship program. There's a lot of components to that program. But the people that don't go through that, that kind of scares me. Can you speak to that, Jeff?
Yes, I can. You know, that's one part about our business. The apprenticeship program is one reason why I got into the union. You know, it's a good way to learn the job. You know, you get paid while you work and you learn. But the safety is the biggest component of it. It's like when you go to job sites, you're taught how to do the job correctly, not take risk, and be profitable because you do it right and you do it safe. And that's been a huge selling point of the apprenticeship program and our workers. Everything that we do is at heights in the ironworking world. Whether you're lifting steel or lifting windows, you're always working at heights to install them, rig them, and there's always a danger of falling or something falling on you. So you have to be very well trained in the aspect of this work.
And how's safety been down there? Have you been, obviously, when something happens, you take a look into it. You got the government, you got OSHA and all that. But I mean, you've been doing this for, what, 20-plus years? How would you assess that?
On union jobs that we work on, safety is very good. But non-union, just here in West Palm just a few months ago, there was a young woman that fell from one of the buildings they were building downtown that was a non-union project. And so I know they don't keep up with the safety like they're supposed to. And it's just to get the job done as fast as you can, and they overlook a lot of safety issues on some of these jobs, I know.
Now, when an accident happens, I mean, does that, you get calls at your local as a result, people saying, wait a minute, I'm not going to work for that company anymore. I'm going to join Local 402. Does that happen?
Yes, occasionally that does. And it's, you know, a lot of people want to do better in this trade. And with a lot of the local companies that aren't union, that just constantly push, low wages, no training, and that's when they get accidents, but you know, a lot of times they don't ever report the accidents. They just keep going forward with them and leave that guy sitting on the side of the road.
Yeah.
It's a shame the way a lot of this stuff has gotten.
And the fines, it's pretty much a slap on the wrist, isn't it?
I believe so for a lot of them. A lot of them just keep moving, and they change company names. They do everything they can to avoid paying fines and staying on the record. They'll open up a new company in a second.
Right.
Avoid all that.
Exactly. Or file bankruptcy, and this way they don't have
file
to pay.
File bankruptcy, or just, you know, dissolve the business and start it under a different name.
Sure. Oh, that happens so much in the trades. Oh, my gosh. Talk to me about your apprenticeship programs. How are we faring? Because there's a lot, as you know, Jeff, there's a lot of good things coming out of Washington. They may not be coming from your legislature down there in Florida, but they're coming out of Washington, especially the Infrastructure and Jobs Act. That's got to be a boom for you, don't you think?
Yes, we're hoping so. Our numbers have picked up some, but, you know, we need more to increase that more. But we're hoping that as some of the money comes down where it does favor apprenticeship programs, that even our governor here in Florida won't be able to mess with that too much, but they always seem to find ways to divert it that so it doesn't help the unions in the apprenticeship programs. They put language in there to make sure that we don't have local language or local hire rules and stuff like that, so these contractors from out of town can get these jobs.
And they can legally do that? Is that true?
Yeah, there's exemption laws that the governor has passed in the last several years. Like, there's been some city ordinances and stuff that we've worked with and come up with language that, you know, it doesn't per se union. It just says if a job is over a certain amount for a county, that they need to, the company that gets the job needs to hire a bona fide apprenticeship program.
Yeah.
And a lot of them have figured if the government, if the local, or if Florida has more money in it at a certain percentage, then they can exempt those hiring laws like that and sort of get out of it. It's like every time we come up with something good, they find a way to take it away from us in Tallahassee, especially a lot of the local stuff that we work hard on.
So,
but a bona fide apprenticeship program benefits everybody,
sure,
not just the youth. And that's like the whole selling point. As long as a company supports a bona fide apprenticeship program and training, how is that a bad thing for your area?
So
that's the way we look at it.
We're talking about government money here. Government money.
A lot of times, yes. Like if it's a county project or on those sites like that, yes. But that's when the state has come in and put exemption laws in there that they don't have to follow the counties if they've got more money in it.
So it sounds like they're trying to do anything possible to avoid union work. Is that
exactly?
Oh,
they know that a lot of these type of companies don't have apprenticeship programs. They know the only ones that do are union workers.
Yeah,
and that's why they try to negate it as much as possible.
That's ridiculous. How,
you know, we're not in a union friendly state here in Florida at all. I mean, every year the teachers are always under attack. Even the ironworkers itself, you know, we constantly fight for every job that we have, and, you know, we support our contractors to get these jobs. But it's a difficult market.
Yeah.
You know, the non-union world has a lot of tools at their disposal. They can drop their price. They'll bid it at our prices, but they always know they can go in cheaper at the end to get the job because, you know, our contractors offer a good wage and health care and retirement. They know they can always go under our wages.
But Jeff, let's pick up on that a little bit. When they underbid the union, and they often can't finish that job, they'll have to go later and say, you know what, we made a mistake here. We have to charge more. Isn't that happening?
That does happen on occasion. Yes, it does. But what a lot of times, I think the contractors or the GCs that hire these companies, they know that that company can't do the job right off the bat. But they'll hire them because they know they'll get just enough of it to get completed that they'll say they'll hire a good union company to come in to finish up what they couldn't, the other company couldn't. Well, then they only want to pay them just the wages, time and material.
Uh-huh.
You know, if the contractor would have got it at his full bid, you know, they could have completed the job on time like they were supposed to. But when they sort of break it down, they're saving on the other guy's low bid. But when the other company comes in, the job's partially done. They don't have to pay that higher price. But the thing is, the guy that's doing it, he just wants time and material. But, you know, there's more into it than that. You know, there's that guy's insurance for his company. There's salaries for all his estimators. You know, they're sort of wanting to cut all that up and then just get a bare bones price to finish it up. So it's really not fair always for a company to come in and finish up a job like that. They really have to watch what they're bidding, because that guy still wants to do it as cheap as possible.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of what you're referencing, we're talking publicly funded projects, right?
I believe so on a lot of them, yes.
Yeah. Which is taxpayer money. Now, this conversation that you and I are having right now, do any of the lawmakers get it down there? I would imagine you're knocking on the doors over there. What is it, Tallahassee, your capital, and say, hey, you know what? this ain't right. Is anybody listening?
You know, there's a few that do, and a lot of them do get it, but they're so outnumbered in Tallahassee. You know, for the last 20 years, the state of Florida has been a Republican state, and they're really working hard on all the language, and every year Tallahassee comes up with, you know, how bad they're going to hurt us this year.
Yeah.
With legislation. And, you know, it's like, you know, we got to get our numbers up as far as the Democratic candidates in this state and stuff, but it's just a hard sell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of noise coming out of Florida.
A lot of noise. It used to be the state was, you know, relatively blue to purple. Now it leans very heavy red.
Yeah.
I'm curious how this next election is going to go. I'm hoping for a good outcome, but we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's tough. You just got to hold your head high, keep moving, do what you can, keep moving in the best direction, which would be the right direction for you.
You know, if you're not at the table, you're definitely on it. So we try to go to every function. We support our candidates and the ones that want to support us. So, you know, we do our best in that arena.
Well, it's amazing when they get money that for a project that they find crafty ways to make sure it doesn't go to the unions, because
they can dice it up pretty well.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, that's sad. That's sad. One more thing here. How are we doing? You know, there's a worker shortage across all the trades in America.
There is.
Yeah. How are we addressing that down there in West Palm Beach?
Well, we put ads out all the time trying to recruit qualified workers and apprentices, and it's a tough sell right now. We have work, but finding workers that are qualified to come in and do it at a journeyman level right now, I don't know where all these workers went. We can only hire workers for how much work we have, so we're always locked into that. But I know in our whole area here in Florida, there's a lot of locals, including myself, that need manpower, and it's hard finding manpower right now. I don't know where all these people are at that used to be knocking on our door for our wages and stuff.
All right, Mr. Bailey. Jeff Bailey, business manager of Iron Workers Local 402. And if you're interested in maybe joining that local, get involved in that apprenticeship program. They need some workers. Ironworkers402.org. Ironworkers402.org. And you can also check them out on Facebook. Okay, Jeff, you take care. Stay safe and stay strong down there. I know it's a tough area. And stay in touch, okay, brother?
I will. Take care.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the latest from the Ohio Federation of Teachers and Smart Local 10. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.